Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my friends. Happy podcast day. Happy Friday if you're listening to this on the day it drops. This is Nicole, and welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. I am so glad you're here. I'm so glad I'm here. We're just here. We're just showing up every day and doing the life thing, and I'm glad for it. So welcome. So let's touch base. How you doing? How are you doing in the summer of COVID? I think the summer of COVID is kind of different for each of us and certainly for people around the world. I just read an article the other day that Melbourne, Australia has gone into stage 4 lockdown. So for my Australians out there, I hope you are hanging in with that challenge, because I know that can be very hard. Curfews and very strict rules on when you can go out and what you can do. And, you know, I'm sitting here in America, not to bash it, but, you know, I'm sure our problem is 100 times worse than yours, and we are not getting that kind of direction. So it's kind of every man for himself over here. But in terms of the beach town that I live in, it's pretty chilled out. We do have non-essential businesses open. And my kids are doing a lot of surfing, which is actually a great activity for a quarantine-ish situation, because they really aren't near anybody else physically, and they spend all day in the water surfing quite a bit away from others. So it's been pretty good. It's been all right. But wherever you are and however this finds you, I hope that you are okay. Hope you're hanging in. What else can I tell you? Okay, so before we get to the topic today, I do want to say that I've been getting a lot of questions about my virtual retreat coming up in September. So I'm going to answer the most frequently asked questions here just for a moment. The first is, will the retreat be recorded? It so happens that I booked the retreat September 18th through the 20th, not realizing that it was the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah, which of course I'm the worst because I'm Jewish and I should have known that. So I'm so sorry. But Friday night, I will be recording it. So Friday night is only an hour and a half session. It's a welcome session. It's sort of an opening to the weekend. And it will just be me and you guys, and I will be recording that. And so if you are indeed interested in signing up for the retreat and you'd like to observe Friday night of that holiday, it will be recorded, and you can still come and join us for all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And you can watch the recording at your leisure, and it will be totally fine. Saturday and Sunday will not be recorded because it's just too large, and there's issues with cloud storage and stuff like that. And I've tried, and it's been an epic fail. So I don't want people to expect the entire weekend to be recorded. I'm not sure if Zoom allows each person on their own computer to do a screen recording. If it does, you are certainly more than welcome to do that. So that's the recording question answered. In terms of what you get, so when you sign up for the virtual retreat, you get a complimentary copy of the deluxe download version of my online course, the whole thing to keep forever, and all four of my original meditations. So people have been asking that. And if you have not done the course, or if you don't own the meditations, it's actually a really great deal, because the course and the meditations together are a $295 value. So that is a question I've been getting a lot. Some people kind of on the fence about the retreat, thinking of, oh, should I sign up for the course? And it's like, well, if you sign up for the retreat, you get the course. So there's that. And I hope to see you there. The last one was so beautiful. It was just really amazing. And every one of you who was there listening to this knows exactly how I feel when I say that, because the impact was pretty phenomenal. So I hope to see you guys in September. It would be amazing to connect with you and to work directly with you. For the final question, people are always asking, you know, do you do private sessions, and I no longer do private sessions, but if you want to work directly with me, the retreat is the way, and it is actually very intimately directly with me, and you will feel that. All right, so that is covered. Other than that, I will just ask that if you are enjoying this podcast, if it brings you joy, if it lights you up, if it helps you get through the day and the week, if it furthers your journey and helps you understand more deeply how to do this work for yourself, just hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps other people to find it, and then you do a lovely service for someone who might be suffering and struggling and have no idea that this work is a solution for them. So that would be really helpful, and I thank you. Okay, all right, let's talk about anger. So I am a big listener to the podcast called The Daily, which is put out by the New York Times. And over the weekend, they do more cultural pieces. It's not really news pieces. It's they have someone read a previous article, sort of a human interest article usually, that had been published in the Times. And so I was listening on Sunday, and the article was written by a woman. Her name is Leslie Jamison. And the article was entitled, "I Used to Insist I Didn't Get Angry, Not Anymore, on Female Rage." Now, you guys might recall from Dr. Sarno's teaching that his number one emotion that he would identify that caused chronic pain was repressed rage. And the reason he labeled rage as the biggest offender is that rage he deemed to be the least acceptable human emotion to express. It was met with incredibly negative reactions from people. And what I would add, even though he didn't, but I think that we can all agree, especially with the Me Too movement and Hillary Clinton's candidacy, however you feel about her, women who are deemed as angry or really boldly self-expressed don't get the best rap. And this article, I really related to it myself because I'm going to read you the first couple paragraphs of the article. And then, of course, if you'd like to follow up, you can look it up on the New York Times Magazine at nytimes.com. But I really relate to this because forever I used to say, I just don't feel angry. Like, and I would say that it's because my father was a rager, which he was. And I would say, I was so uncomfortable with his anger as a child. I just don't feel angry. But lately, I have really been connecting more with my anger, and it has had such a profound effect on my ability to lessen my anxiety and to make my body release any sort of tension it's feeling. And so I want to share that with you today. So this podcast is about anger and about the importance of expressing our anger in appropriate ways. But especially, it's about female anger, because I think for the ladies out there, we really need to get more in touch with our deserving when it comes to expression of anger. We are allowed to feel angry. We're allowed to feel rage. Are we allowed to abuse others? No, hells no. But we must feel it for the sake of our own health. So I'm just going to read you a couple of paragraphs from Leslie Jamison's article, "I Used to Insist I Didn't Get Angry, Not Anymore." For years, I described myself as someone who wasn't prone to anger. "I don't get angry," I said. "I get sad." I believed this inclination was mainly about my personality, that sadness was a more natural emotion for me than anger, that I was somehow built this way. It's easy to misunderstand the self as private when it's rarely private at all. It's always a public artifact, never fixed, perpetually sculpted by social forces. In truth, I was proud to describe myself in terms of sadness rather than anger. Why? Sadness seemed more refined and also more selfless, as if you were holding the pain inside yourself, rather than making somebody else deal with its blunt force trauma. But a few years ago, I started to get a knot in my gut at the canned cadences of my own refrain. I don't get angry, I get sad. At the shrillest moments of our own self-declarations, I am X, I am not Y, we often hear in that tinny register another truth, lurking expectantly, and begin to realize there are things about ourselves we don't yet know. By which I mean that at a certain point I started to suspect I was angrier than I thought. Now, the article goes on, and it's brilliant, and I really, really highly recommend it. But that's what I want to read to you for today. First of all, I want to read it to you because I think it's so spot on about anger and sadness and how we feel so much more generous when we just get sad. And I have said that exact statement about myself a million times in my life. I don't get angry, I get sad. I'm that kind of person. I'm a person that goes right to tears. I don't even feel anger. And I think that we can become so convinced that we know who we are, we can block ourselves from those truths that are lingering underneath the surface, and those truths may be the ones that can really heal us. So first of all, I do want to say that I think it's an important inquiry. The first thing that we ever need to do if we want to solve a new problem is to inquire, to be curious. I always say, I wish you a gentle curiosity about your life. I wish you to be uncertain, perhaps, about exactly who you are. That's my wish for you. Because the moment we become uncertain and curious about who we are, we open the door to healing. We open the door to revelation and to inspiration and to evolution. That's what we do when we get curious. And so, not as a result of this article, because I only read it a couple days ago, but as a result of my own spiritual evolution as a teacher of this work and as an experiencer of this work, because I'm constantly using my own body as a science experiment for you guys. Don't worry, you can thank me later. I have become more in touch with my anger. I've stopped shoving it away and saying that I'm just sad. And sometimes I allow my anger to come through in my journal speak, but sometimes the times that my anger engages with me is not a time that I could easily grab a notebook or a computer and write it out. And so I've been starting to allow myself to have more of a dialogue about my anger, and I've allowed that dialogue to be very uncomplicated. If you listen to me talk and teach about my work, oftentimes you'll probably hear me say, the nervous system and the brain in the way that we're describing them are very simple. They're very primitive. The reactions are on par with about between a 5 and 8 year old child. You know, there are good guys and there are bad guys. Either you're safe or you're unsafe. We need to stay or we need to leave. We need to fight or we need to flee. It's a rather simple thought process in terms of the decisions that our brain and our nervous system make regarding what would be a good idea for us, what would be healthy, what would be safe. They're not complicated decisions. They're often knee-jerk, reflexive, you know, fight or flight decisions, as we all know. And so when I look to find the voice for my journal speak sometimes, I have to continue to remind myself, although the complex thoughts are of course welcome, when it's just a feeling, when it's just a feeling that's trying to present itself to me, sometimes the most effective way to express it is as if I were 5. And so I'll give you an example. The other night I woke up pretty soon after I had fallen asleep, and a situation in my life came to mind that had woken me up. Let's just go there. I don't want to get in too much detail, but it was a specific situation regarding a specific person in my life that came into my mind, and I felt rage at this person. doesn't mean that this person needed to be confronted. Sometimes our rage has to do with ourselves and feeling angry at ourselves for, let's say, not drawing better boundaries or not showing up differently in the relationship. So it wasn't that I felt that I needed to, you know, my life was unmanageable because I had to go and confront this person. I just wanted to be open and curious about expressing this rage. I mean, it was not a feeling of just annoyance. I woke up at midnight and the thoughts in my mind were rageful. And so at first I did what we all do, which is I sort of like went back over the story in my mind of what I think of this person and how they behave and how it's disrespectful and how it bothers me. And I did that for a while and it wasn't helping me and I wasn't falling back to sleep. And the feeling was like, it almost felt like it was trying to rise in my throat and I was swallowing it down and it was like taking over my whole chest and I was so angry. And I do not get angry, people. You ask anybody in my life, ask any of my kids how many years it's been since mommy lost her temper. And listen, I'm proud of that. I don't want to abuse people with my blunt force trauma, but I also don't want to sicken myself with my rage. And I started saying, I didn't even say it out loud, of course, you know, Tiffany's asleep and I'm not going to make a scene. I started saying out loud over and over again at this person. And you also have to remember, I'm not this immature. Journal speak doesn't stay true. Journal speak is allowing our inner child to speak and to say what she needs to say. It may not be what my 48-year-old self needs to say or would ever say or even really thinks. But that inner child needed to speak, and I started to say over and over again, I hate you. I hate you. I effing hate you. I, you know, you do this, you do that. And it was just this such like a simple, primitive, repetitive. I allowed my fist to clench. I allowed my stomach to tighten. I allowed my diaphragm to push the thoughts forward. I hate you. I just did it over and over and I felt the message be heard. I know you guys think I'm a little bit crazy and I guess I am, but I literally felt the physical shift. I don't know how long I sat and repeated those kind of words and really felt into them and pictured the person and pictured the way they offend me and I felt it and I felt it and I felt it. And I felt myself calm down. And I felt myself know what he needed to do, which was a simple communication, and that I would end up doing the next day. And first of all, I fell asleep and slept peacefully for the rest of the night. And second of all, I felt my body untense. I felt my muscles release and relax. We must feel our anger. My brothers, but mostly my sisters, because girls were not feeling it. We think we're just sad. I mean, raise your hand if you relate. I think we think we're just sad. I think we think that life is a disappointment or a bummer or a burden or we're scared or we're anxious, and we are all those things. But if you scratch the surface of anxiety, sometimes there's fear. You know, and oftentimes I look at animals. You know, Blue Dog is the coolest, chillest cat. He does not react poorly, but one time, I'll never forget this, he was kind of puppyish. He was under a year, and we were at an outdoor cafe, and his leash was tethered to a wrought iron chair that was very heavy, so I thought it would be enough to hold the leash, but it was also made a horrible scraping sound on the concrete when it moved. And so his leash was tethered, and I think he got excited about something, and he lunged forward, and the chair and the leash moved, and it made a horrible, loud, scraping noise. And he immediately turned around, like really like lightning fast, and looked at where the noise had come. His tail went deeply down between his legs, and he was then scared. He looked scared. But when you attended to him, what happened was he acted out in anger. He looked like an angry dog. Now, fear and anger are so intermixed that even animals can show us what a fine line there is between fear and anger. Sometimes fear is underneath anger. Sometimes anger is underneath fear, and they just go and go and go. It's like an endless cycle. And I think we're so good As soon as we get into journal speak and we really understand what's going on, we're good at calling out our fears, our anxieties, saying what causes us concern. But our rage, our anger, it doesn't come up so easily. And so I think that maybe we need to be intentional about this. We need to say to ourselves, what stops me from feeling angry? You know, is it like the article says? Does it feel unacceptable? Does it feel like I am kinder and gentler and more appealing if I'm sad? And, you know, in the end, you can feel your sadness from here to forever, but if there's anger in there that needs to be felt, the symptoms are not going to go away completely. Sadness is part of it. And everything, by the way, is cyclical. I mean, we feel grief, we feel rage, we feel terror, we feel PTSD, complex PTSD, symptoms of which we are dealing with. These are lifetime efforts, and that's okay, because that's it. This is a human life. You don't get out of here alive. We have to feel everything. But being intentional about knowing that the rage is in there and that it's important to feel it and that it could be around something that doesn't feel socially acceptable to be angry about. I remember in one of Dr. Sarno's books, he talks about a man, a young man, who his wife has a baby and they have a newborn and his back goes out completely. And the way he healed was finally being able to express his rage at having had a baby. Even though he loved his baby and, you know, life is complicated. He loved his baby. He was so excited. But there's huge loss that comes from having a baby, huge loss of your partner's attention, huge loss of your autonomy and your life and your choices and your sleep and everything. We all know. And so that's what got rid of his back pain, coming to finally, and I don't know how long it took him because this is a bold thing to be able to admit, that his newborn baby was causing him abject rage. And this is the thing, guys, that sounds horrible on its face, but who cares? It's just a feeling. We're full of feelings. Feelings are made to be felt. And so I don't know. I mean, I get a lot of questions from people that make me understand how deeply our society has poisoned us with the idea that things should be easy and we don't have to feel things. We don't have to feel it all. I get a lot of people who write me and they're like, I know that you say journal speak is the way out, but my life is too hard. Too many bad things happen. I just don't want to feel it. And I say, I get it. And I hear you. But life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, and it always will be. And if you can embrace that concept, it's a tremendous relief. You can say, I don't want to feel my feelings, and I get you, and I'm down for that, but then you have to choose your pain. Your pain is feeling your feelings for you. And if you can feel them, and if you can be bold enough to take this journey, if you can suspend your disbelief, if you can invite in your curiosity, and give yourself the gift of trying to do this, you start to learn how to feel your feelings and your pain no longer needs to express them for you. You know, it's funny. I find it really helpful when people are struggling to believe to remind them that what I'm teaching you is something you already believe. You already believe that when you're really sad about something, really sad or really frustrated or really disappointed, so that's an emotional trigger. Water falls out of your face. That's a physical response. That was an emotional stimuli that caused a physical response. You believe that can happen. I know you do. You also believe that you can have a stressful day where things happen that make you feel angry and sad and overwhelmed and frustrated, and you can get a headache. When you have a headache after a long, angering, frustrating, you know, irritating day, you don't think you have a brain tumor. You pop an Advil and you say, oh, I need to get some sleep. I have such a stressful headache, stressed out, stress headache. I bet you have been hungry before and you got bad news, or you were in a situation that required you to act in sort of an emergency. I bet you lost your appetite. I bet you know how that feels. Doesn't mean your stomach got any fuller. It means your emotional stimuli of whatever happened to you led to a physical reaction. You lost your appetite. You physically did not desire food anymore. I bet you've heard of a comedian who was about to go on stage and he said, I ran to the bathroom and I threw up. He doesn't need to be checked for stomach cancer or an ulcer or whatever else could cause someone to vomit. He was scared that was an emotional stimuli that led to a physical reaction, vomiting. I could go on and on. What I'm trying to tell you is, what I teach, you already believe. The only difference is when anything becomes chronic and when anything becomes painful, we go straight to the physical and we throw the emotional out completely. And my loves, I cannot tell you how powerfully this is not serving us. This is hurting us. This is damaging us in terms of it's stealing from our lives. It's stealing from our ability to be present with our families, to be actively involved in whatever brings us joy. We're losing that time and those experiences because we resist the fact that a physical problem could be created and sustained by the repressed emotions that have been built up over the years that are threatening to rise. And when they threaten to rise, our brains and our nervous systems deem those repressed emotions as a greater predator than our physical pain, and the physical pain is what is chosen. In the world of the nervous system, where life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, it will choose your physical pain as what is the hurts versus the hurts worse, the less painful option, every single time when it reaches a certain point. So you might be frustrated, or you might be angry at your mother, or you might be devastated over something that happened with your kid, or you might be rageful at your boss or your money situation or your parents, your husband, your wife, whatever. But if it banks for a long enough time, you'll stop feeling the extent of that rage and you'll just get back pain, or you'll just get pelvic pain or shoulder pain or headaches or stomach issues or skin disorders or fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue or whatever else. You will get the thing that your brain and your nervous system deems as a safer option, because then you're just dealing with that thing. The rage over the sexual abuse that you sustained as a child feels impossible to handle to your nervous system. But your back pain feels like a walk in the park. Just go lay down. What's the big deal? So you're missing out on everything. You're safe. Your nervous system only cares about survival. It only cares about safe. It is our job to inform it, to teach it, to rewire our brains and to change the response. And by feeling our feelings, by accepting that we don't just feel sad, we feel rage. By accepting that and not judging it and not saying that makes us a certain type of person and that means that we're this or that. By consciously understanding that doesn't mean we're going to get alienated from our tribe. You know, I understand that technically if you were a rageful person and every time someone came into your space, you screamed at them or hit them or bit them or kicked them, yeah, you'd be alienated by your tribe, and they should. But that's not what rage is going to do to you. You're okay. You can feel this. You have to feel it properly. You know, you can do that exercise I did in the night and you can do your journal speak practice. And for those of you who are new to the podcast and the word journal speak is new to you, just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Click on the resources tab. Watch the videos in my YouTube series, Healing Yourself 1-4. Listen to all the episodes of this podcast. Read my blog. Go to my Facebook group, which is Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. Talk to the people on that page. Thousands of people in conversation supporting one another. Everything I just mentioned is free. You can learn about what journal speak is. You can boldly have hope, and hope translates to belief. Belief translates to action, and action translates to healing. This is available to you guys. And my life's mission is to bring this information forth, because I would never be living the beautiful life that I have. I was told at the age of 19 I wouldn't have biological children. I wouldn't travel. I wouldn't exercise. I wouldn't play sports. I would have a limited life forever, and I do all of those things. My three beautiful children, oh my God, and I don't mean just physically beautiful, although, you know, I'm biased, but they are. They're just amazing. They're amazing, and what they're bringing forth in the world is their contribution, and it's because I gave birth to them. And I did that because I didn't have to live in fear and limitation because of my severe spinal condition that never accounted for my pain. I have never needed a surgery or an injection or a manipulation, nothing. I do this emotional work and I've been pain-free for years and years and years and years and years. And all the other symptoms that have come through my body, headaches and skin stuff and stomach stuff and pelvic stuff, and I've experienced it all, but I just let it flow through me because it's just feelings. Sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies, and the journey is never over. And how beautiful is that? When we stop expecting to just feel well without doing any of this emotional work, we open ourselves to everything. And I can't tell you how many people come to me, almost every one of the people that I've ever had an interaction with, and say, I can't believe I'm saying this, Nicole, but thank God for the pain. Because if it hadn't been for the pain, I would never have done this work. And if I had never done this work, I would never know myself like I do and continue to be open to knowing myself. I would never be this available for my joy or for my family or for my creativity or for my work. Everything changes once you've done this work. So I hope to inspire you to do this for yourself. All right, my dear lovely people, I hope that this has opened your eyes a bit to your own rage and your own anger. If you're interested in the article that I opened with, it's called I Used to Insist I Didn't Get Angry, Not Anymore, on Female Rage by Leslie Jameson. You can look it up and you can also listen to it being read this past weekend on an episode of The Daily, which is a podcast you can get anywhere you get your podcasts. If you are interested in signing up for my online retreat, the link is on my homepage, thecureforchronicpain.com, or of course you can go to the retreats tab on my website and read the bios of all my instructors. Every one of my Omega instructors will be there bringing new material. So even if you've been at a previous retreat, there will be new material and every lesson is a revelation. I love it and I do it alongside with you guys. And of course, me being there, teaching all my lessons and being available to all your questions. Every one of you guys gets to ask me your personal questions. It's incredible. It's amazing. And it also opens yourself to be part of a community of all the people who are healing alongside me doing this work, which is amazing to feel like you're not alone and to be part of something. I told you about my resources tab, rate and review on iTunes. All right, loves. Oh, and don't forget to follow me on Instagram because I have so much free content out there. And I do an IGTV series called I Am Evidence, which drops every Monday. And once again, all of that is free. So follow me on Instagram at Nicole Sachs, LCSW. All right, until next week, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. Lots of love. See you then. Bye.